So welcome to Lag Radio, your weekly source of video game appreciation, chiptune idolatry, super sweet giveaways, and so very much more. This evening on the show, episode 14, we're covering Doom 2016 from id Software, published by Bethesda Softworks, and we are going to be going over it in depth. We're going to be doing a deep dive on history and development. Of course, we're going to be going through the story as well, or what story there is. We're going to be talking about the soundtrack to the game because it's such a driving, prominent force. And we're going to be covering, of course, the gameplay as well. This evening on the show, we have a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself, please, sir?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. As my dear friend might have alluded to, but probably not yet, I am McKnowledge, essentially because I spend all my time at McDonald's.
Oh, great.
But otherwise, I am his longtime friend who's, you know, very into this game, amongst other ones, but this one really jives with my personality, and I'm really excited to be on.
Hell yes. Welcome to the show, and I think it's the first time I've ever had you even remotely related to my radio goings, even though I've been here at the station for, like, 7 years.
Yeah, you put a lot of effort in your shows, and I don't like doing homework, so there you go.
Well, that's fine. I will be happy to be here as your rock, but I know you have a lot of input. You were the first name and first person that I came up with when I thought, I'm going to be doing a show on Doom. This is the Doom guy. He is the living incarnation of Doom guy. So here we go. So this evening on the show, again, we're going to be covering Doom. If you haven't played it yet, you could probably just play it in the next break. We're going to be playing some music and... just go through some of the game and play through it so you know, or watch a video of it, and then you'll get an idea exactly. Just in like a snippet of 4 minutes, you can feel what Doom is, the franchise is like, and what it's trying to accomplish. But in the meantime, though, we're going to play some music, of course, from the soundtrack. So we're going to start off with actually the beginning of the soundtrack because I think it's such a sweet intro. We're going to play the first song, which is Dogma. And it kind of is just this intro of a demon talking about the Doom guy story, or the Doom Marine story. And then we're going to get into Rip and Tear, which is such a strong, strong opening to the game. So, if you want to call in, feel free to 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. You can also find us on the web at our various different social media outlets. So we've got Facebook page and a Twitter page, pretty much the same link, which is facebook.com or twitter.com/laglifradio. We have a playlist archive at lagradio.kuci.org. You can follow us there to get all of the podcasts on RSS feed and see all the songs we played for the previous weeks. Our Instagram page, at DJ_Marmar, so 2 underscores in that one. I was not able to snag up the single underscore because I am slow, but I got the double. So there's that. And then also we stream on Twitch now. So twitch.tv/DJ_Marmar. That one I got. We can find us there on Sunday, Monday, and Thursday night streaming either the game of the week or Magic the Gathering is my fallback sort of game. So like the past week, we have been playing a bunch of Magic decks on the stream, and we probably will continue to do so in this coming week, though I'm not going to spoil what next week's game is quite yet. Also, don't forget, later on, we're going to have a giveaway, so join us on the show a little bit later on if you happen to, you know, have something to do, laundry or something right now. Well, you could listen while doing your laundry. I'd welcome that. But yeah, later on, we're going to do the giveaway for a Kako Demon pendant. Yes, Kako Demon, one of the awesome, iconic figures of Doom. Someone made a really cool metal pendant, and I will be happy to ship it off to the lucky person who wins this giveaway. So look forward to details on that a little bit later on. All right, without further ado, let's get into that music. Again, first up, we're going to listen to Dogma and then Rip and Tear. Thank you so much for listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. My name is Marmar the Midboss. I'm joined by McKnowledge, and we are discussing Doom.
Doom.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Lag Radio here with DJ Marmar the Midboss and McKnowledge. We are talking Doom 2016. If you didn't already guess from the tracks we just got done listening to, it is so heavy and so sweet, the entire soundtrack. I can't wait to talk about that in just a little bit. But before we get into that, though, we have to start with the history and development of the game. So first off, if you maybe you've been living under a rock, maybe you've never heard of the Doom series before, kind of began in 1993. It's like the most influential shooter perhaps ever made. Although I guess it might be arguable, like with Wolfenstein. What do you think? Have you played Wolfenstein?
Yeah, I've played Wolfenstein. Obviously, it's easy to get familiar with it, even if you're not a long-term fan, because the new Wolfenstein incorporates some of the old ones. But yeah, like you kind of said, Wolfenstein showed off the technology, and then Doom just took that technology and showed everyone that, what potential it really had.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. It's definitely got the Doom has the pop culture awareness that I don't think Wolfenstein really had back in the day. So after the first Doom game was released in 1994, there was a sequel made, Doom 2: Hell on Earth, and then there was also I think there were a couple of spin-offs possibly, but Doom 3 came back in 2004, and it was a totally different take on the series. Did you play Doom 3?
I did. I have very little memory of it. I know that it played more, like you said, the horror genre. It didn't have the speedy Doom element to it. But aside from kind of the criticism that it's not true to the Doom form, if you look at it kind of as a standalone game and the bits that I remember out of it actually was pretty good, which also the parts that helped it again, like with Wolfenstein, that technology bump that kind of came around the same time helped, shed a little extra enthusiasm towards the game.
Sure, yeah, that was kind of what I gathered from what I'd been looking online. I didn't get to play it myself. I was pretty young at the time, and I don't think I had an Xbox at the time either, which I think it was kind of featured on or was exclusive for. But I remember it was just like, whoa, this looks scary, and also this doesn't look as fast-paced as the original Doom. So I know that it wasn't exactly in the same vein as the originals, and some veterans were very upset about it. But I heard, yeah, it was a pretty decent standalone. But then there was Doom 4, and Doom 4 began development in 2008. And it was initially going to be just a straight-up remake of Doom 2, Hell on Earth. And after some kind of issues in the development cycle, they realized that they were kind of going in the wrong direction. And it wasn't really capturing the essence of Doom, essence eau de Doom, if you will. So they said, we're just going to retitle the Doom. We're going to start from kind of the ground up, and we want to pay more respect, more homage to the original two games in the series rather than doing something a little bit else. So it was headed by Hugo Martin and Marty Stratton, and the development of the Doom reboot had a really huge focus, like one of the top things on their list for making sure that this game was good and did the original series justice was making sure that the movement was correct. And yeah, I think that's what McDonald mentioned a little bit earlier, was kind of just this fast-paced, frenetic sort of action that's just almost constant throughout the entire game. That's what they knew Doom for. That's what I think a lot of the players, the audiences, and the veterans know the series for, and they wanted to make sure that was right. So that was the first thing when developing this game. They wanted to make sure that the gameplay was immensely addictive as well, because that's kind of just the way that the Doom series works. Maybe you would agree, maybe not, but I think that it's just so fast, and how you have to adapt to fights on a dime. It's just like so many things are coming flying at you, and you want to just keep shooting more dudes, just mindlessly blam 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 blam, and go to the next room.
Yeah, I mean this the especially the original Doom has a great history of just killing people's ability to get their work done, whether it's colleges, work. These people, historically were putting away hours and hours and hours into something that made them no money, but that existential satisfaction was really guaranteed with every battle, even if you'd been through it three or four times. And that return to form was excellent with this one. I definitely felt that again.
That's a great point about people just spending a bunch of time playing it wherever, because I know that it's, I wouldn't call it a meme, but it's kind of just a long-running history of can X run Doom? So replace X with any sort of technology. They've been able to make Doom run on like a Texas Instruments TI calculator. They've been able to make it run on like a printer or copier scanner or something like on the screen. You can get Doom on anything. You can put it on absolutely anything. And it's not just because, like, oh, we can do it. It's because we want to play Doom on our wonky sort of instruments. So let's see what we can do. But yeah, it's all about Doom is all about going like 100 miles an hour, blasting these demons in the face, and just going from room to room, wiping them out. Sometimes you will boost it up to 200 miles an hour when you get some sort of power-ups like haste or whatever, and you're just running circles around dudes all day long. Now, sometimes those demons are faster than you, and sometimes they can even teleport behind you, and sometimes they can just jump on you and dash your brains into the ground. And really, it's very, very violent. It's very unapologetic in trying to make the style come off as something like an old Iron Maiden cover art album, like album cover art or something, just like this kind of cheesy 80s metal vibe, but it's so sweet.
That was definitely what was great about the original games, is as much as they were ripping off the music, I mean, that music was guaranteed to provide you with, like you said, that atmosphere of what's going on. And there's a reason no one pulled the Vanilla Ice and started making phone calls about the music. It's because that's where it belonged. It was part of the pop culture at the time, and, you know, it found its place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of my thoughts kind of when it comes to this game, it's similar probably in the way that it influenced games in the way that Mortal Kombat did. It was like, this is what we can push for a mature theme in a video game. And I'm sure there was some backlash, people just citing Doom and Mortal Kombat as like the downfall of our generation. But hey, you know what? Here it is, still putting out stuff and going strong. Now, one of the big influencers for when they were making the game is that they wanted to appeal to the crowd that was just like, you know what? I just got back from a hard day's work. You know, I just have been working for like 10 hours. I want to crack a beer open, possibly, or some other sort of beverage that may or may not be alcoholic. I want to sit down on my couch, and I just want to kill demons. And I want everyone else in the world to just shut up for a moment so that I can focus on this, or just not even necessarily focus, but just like mindlessly blast dudes. And it's so effective in doing that, I think. Just from the opening moment, it was interesting listening to some of the interviews, and they were talking about how they thought originally, like, let's put in a tutorial, you know, let's have the main protagonist, Olivia Pierce, let's have her kind of like walking back and forth, talking about her motives and how you're bolted to this table, and there will be this little like, okay, this is how you shoot your gun, this is how you move. No, they decided totally skip that because that's not cool, that's not fun, and that's not the style that they're going for this game. They want you to just jump in into the action, even from like right after the intro. So the opening of the game is you bolted to a table, demons are surrounding you, and suddenly you just like burst free from your shackles. You grab a pistol nearby from, I think, some sort of dead dude possibly just happens to be in the room, and you immediately just blast the demons in the room, like right in their macabre looking faces. Just no time to think, immediately just blam blam blam, and there you go. That's the start.
Yeah, it definitely set itself apart. Like, we're not going to do the horror thing. We're not going to make Call of Duty with a Doom skin. We're going to make this Doom. And the only way to show you that is within the first few minutes, and we got to do it fast.
Right. And one of the things that they also focused on was making sure that the story that they're going to tell, they know that people going into this game don't want this heavy dialogue. They don't want this existential sort of, what are they trying to say here? And what is the demons actually represent in real life? And this and that. No, you know what? There's basically like very, very bare bones story in there to kind of tie together all the scenes and all the battle sequences. But in general, it's just you going into these fights and having a good time. Now, that said, there is some story, like I said, and when you break free of those shackles in the beginning of the game, you actually find that, well, first off, you're naked. You've been naked to the table with these demons, like, I don't know, doing something to you. Who knows what? Sounds exciting, I know. But you go nearby.
I'm more worried about the humans, but yeah.
Sure. But the Praetor's suit, your suit, the Doom guy's suit, is in another room, and it's inside of this, like, sarcophagus thing. And they don't explain any of that. They don't go and tell you, like, there's no voice in your head saying, all right, there's your suit. You are, like, this legendary figure who's known to kill demons. No, they let you kind of figure it out. There's very little exposition. But if you want to figure out why that is in, like, a sarcophagus, there is a way to do so. And it's through the Codex, which kind of acts as, like, a repository for all your info.
Yeah, I definitely, as someone who at first really was a part of the, I just want to run and shoot and kill, I actually got a little bit sucked into that, which is not typical for me or my personality. But when you hear, you know, why is this guy, like you said, you kind of want that information after a while. Like, after you start accomplishing your objective, which is just this rage and revenge-fueled anger, you also kind of want to know, like, what's kind of got that fire in his belly, because you got it in your belly too. So it feeds that desire.
Right, yeah. It's important to also note that the Codex doesn't just hold info about, of course, you, the Doom guy or Doom Marine, but also you unlock more and more information about the demons. You unlock more information about the facility that you're playing through and Hell itself. And yeah, there's a whole lot of info actually in there. There's a lot of lore that they put into it, but they didn't want to force the player to have to deal with that. They wanted it to be totally optional, and that I think that was a really strong design choice.
Yeah, especially, you know, when you have X demon number 3 coming at you. At first, it's like, you know, you kind of just attribute, you see that it's real names off in the corner, but, you know, when leg day comes at me, I think you know which son of a gun that is. But leg day jumping up, coming at me, I've got 3 imps that I finally got under control, and then this guy just coming out of the air frustrates the hell out of me, so I call him leg day regardless. But later on, I do find it interesting to find out the origins of leg day.
Sure, exactly, yeah. So one of the things, yeah, I mean, you're mentioning like all these dudes coming at you. It's also important to note, like, this isn't happening only in, you know, of the 13 missions like 9 through 13 are the heavier ones where you just have all of these enemies coming at you. No, they're flying at you from like mission 1, mission 2. There's a bunch of dudes that you have to try and take care of. And I think it's spectacular the way that they make you feel like such a badass. That's like the number one feeling that I got from this. I was like, damn, after one mission, I feel like I can go in there. I don't care that I just have a pistol and a single shotgun. I can go and race around these demons and I can probably murder them all. And I did.
Yeah. And you will continue to do so for the next, like you said, some odd amount of missions. Those same demons are going to be there throughout the game. Your pistol and your shotgun are going to be there throughout the game. So as much as you like kind of create your style throughout the story, there's always that kind of essential, you know, piece to it that you get that continuity and that just, like you said, you go from room to room and you never feel powerless. Like, that was not the point of this game. The point was to make you feel powerful, and I think they did a good job of that.
Yeah, I think that it's great that they're able to make you feel powerful through the gameplay immediately, but at the same time, they are able to build you up lore-wise. So like we were talking about how there is some story and why you were in the sarcophagus. They took inspiration from famous action films like Jaws, where they build up the main character villain so much over the course of the movie without really like showing them in their full force until the end of it. And that's kind of what they did here, is where there are these little hints of, you are not just a regular human being, you are something else. And then once you actually get to Hell, not really spoiler it, because you're supposed to know everything about the game at this point. That's kind of the point of the show. So we're not really spoiling it. But when you get into Hell, there are these testaments that you reach, and a demon's like otherworldly voice starts speaking to you, these almost biblical passages talking about this doom slayer who was sealed away for millennia by demons from Hell. And they sealed you away because if you were freed, then you would just destroy all of Hell, like just take down the whole damn thing. So it's kind of a interesting thing where you see more and more exposition through these testament things, and you start to feel like, all right, I am a badass in gameplay, and I'm also truly a badass because Hell fears me. Like, I am a demon, basically.
Yeah, that was a great turn that they did on it, because you really do take, like, how we feel about Hell, that, like, well, maybe not we, but people feel about Hell. Like, it's this, like, otherworldly, scary thing that happened, you know, has, like, a long, long history. And then you realize that that's how, you know, they've perceived battles, they've perceived other races, and now you've made it into their first age, their second age. You know, their generations ahead are going to learn about you. The same way, you know, people spread the lore of, you know, certain religions and certain belief systems.
Definitely. One of the big design choices that they went with this time, I'll definitely want to hear your opinion on this compared to the original Doom. So in this game, there's a bunch of different routes and paths that you can take around, like, pretty open maps a lot of the time. And they balance that with moments where you're just in this very linear sort of single route where you have to go through this one corridor in order to progress so that you can grab a certain weapon or interact with a certain panel or something, learn a new mechanic. And I thought that balance was pretty good. Maybe you'll agree, but also I want to know your thoughts on that versus how the original Dooms were with their level design.
As far as this one goes, there's definitely, like you said, since there's not like a force story upon you, the way they kind of rein you in is through the level design. It's, we'll let you kind of run around and do this your own way to a certain extent, But like you said, you've got to advance through a handful of demons that are going to be showing up in the future. You're going to want to see a handful of these weapons that are going to be essential to getting through the levels, maybe not at the lower difficulties, but at the higher difficulties. Like some of those ranged weapons are really your only way of surviving the imps, versus the original Doom, which, I guess it depends on who you're asking, but you really could, run through that thing with a shotgun and a BFG and have a very similar effect. And additionally, with this game design, it allowed layers, which is great because that made more options for the secret passages, which, like I said, if you're going through on a first pass, normal difficulty, you really don't have to hunt down each and every individual secret. But again, either A, you've just gotten really committed to it and you want to see what's in those like little nooks and crannies, or B, you're just getting destroyed on Nightmare and you need those extra little, edges in battle. So I like the way they did it this time around, even if it is different than the original Doom.
Sure, yeah. I think one of the comparisons that a lot of people have made was that the original Doom has a lot of those moments where you go to the end of a corridor, you press a panel in, you have to just turn right back around, and then there's these monster closets that show up all of a sudden, just doors that open up that weren't there before, that were part of the wall, and monsters come pouring out of them. I don't think that we saw as much of that in this game. So what did you think about that?
I think part of that is because, again, we've now entered like true 3D where that was kind of a simulated 3D in the past. So now when you run past the door, it's not as like subtle as it might have been in the past. Like in the past, the doors, you could see like a little color change, and that was the door. It was the secret. It was something that was going to come and haunt you later. Whereas now the levels are so intensely designed that you can kind of make a mental map of it. Which, of course I like because, as much as I can get surprised, the way they do it this time is the kind of the spawning. So instead of having them flood in through a specific door, they would kind of up and spawn, which was good, except for when it was that freaking leg day. I hate that guy. I'm gonna beat that to death throughout this. But yeah, I think it really was, you're seeing the difference in the design, the 3D modeling, the details. You're not going to be able to hide a lot from the player. So you kind of, take the same idea. You still want to have them turn around and see something that they know that's going to cause them a bit of hell. But, it was just a different take on it, and I really enjoyed it.
Cool. Yeah, I like that a lot, actually. Yeah, I was very happy with the way that they handled it, because that's a good point. That with the graphics fidelity that we currently have, it's more difficult to just surprise players when at least when you're going for like a realistic sort of look. Now, with regards to another feature of the game that I'm not sure, maybe you did you play the game when it came out?
2016?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you play through any of the multiplayer?
I dabbled in it to see what it was about, and some other people were a little bit more patient with it than I was, because technically it's a good multiplayer. You get multiplayer fun out of it. You go, you find some friends, find some strangers, shoot each other up, and it's good fun, but it's not the same experience you get with the single player. And the single player is what really is, that part that's going to live on in our, history of Doom. The multiplayer was just kind of a, well, here you go. You bought the game. You deserve a little multiplayer.
Okay, so yeah, I think that was one of the criticisms I saw online. I didn't get to play the multiplayer myself. I was playing it on PS4, and I don't even know if the servers are still running, to be honest, 2 years later. But yeah, people were saying it was kind of just tacked on. I think it was from even a different studio, so it wasn't even in-house at id Software. And yeah, it wasn't quite up to what you would expect from a Doom game, I guess.
Yeah, I vaguely remember someone discussing that it was actually, you'll see similarities to one of the Halo games because it was like the same people who made those levels. And that's why, you have something that technically it works. You can have your people there, you can have your arena, you can run around as a demon, which is probably the funnest part of it all. But really, it was executed well. But again, it's not what people remember. It's just something extra to do.
Okay. So we in that same vein, though, there was also a level editor. So I know that a big part of the original Doom series was the modding scene, people making their own levels, crafting their own power-ups and different art and animations that they could plug into it, all sorts of different wild things into Doom. I have even seen a Doom where someone played through it where every single polygon, like every single sprite, was just a picture of Tim Allen's face. Which is fantastic. Like YouTube this if you don't know this already. YouTube it, see it. Whenever you fire a gun, whenever anything makes a sound, it's his like his sound. It's unreal. So with this game, they didn't have something quite to that effect. You can't quite mod it, I think, in the same way, but there is a level editor in the form of what's called Snap Map. And it's made for like all those really creative folk who like to throw together these relentless, nightmarish challenges at each other, kind of like the Super Mario editor, if you played through that at all on the Wii U, I think it was. It kind of reminds me of the Halo's Forge mode in that it's pretty simple to use. It's pretty intuitive, I think, and you're actually capable of producing some pretty decent levels without knowing anything about game design, anything about coding and whatnot. Did you get to play through Snap Map?
That's one of the things that my creativity is a little bit lacking. I wish that I actually had spent a little bit more time on it, but yeah, I kind of read and saw some of what the work that other people were doing, escort missions, everything from recreating old Doom maps, and I wish I had a creative bone in my body so that way I could enjoy that kind of thing. But again, that I think felt less tacked on and was more of an acknowledgement, like you said, of the tradition of kind of the do it your own little DIY project of Doom, if you will, and kind of acknowledging that history. I actually don't know much about what PC people were doing with it. I don't know if they got a little bit more creative than Snap Map.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm sure that there's probably the capability of doing that, but I never actually went into it and looked into seeing what mods there are for the PC version. I guess I just assume that there's always probably someone modding the PC to be crazy, like Skyrim mods where the sun is Thomas the Tank, the train engine or something, like all these wild things. So that's going to just about wrap it up for the history and development portion of the program. So we're going to get back into that really, really amazing soundtrack. So we're going to listen now to again, Mick Gordon, of course, he's the composer of the soundtrack. We're going to listen to At Doom's Gate, and then we're going to listen to Hellwalker and Flesh and Metal. Really, really good stuff that blends the industrial side, some electronic sounds, and of course, heavy metal and djent sort of progressive metal. So don't forget later on to tune in for our giveaway. We're going to be doing this. Actually, we're going to be doing it online, so some of the more details I'll be sending to you shortly. If you didn't already follow us on our Facebook and Twitter at Lag Life Radio, you can find us on Instagram. It is at DJ double underscore Marmar. Our Twitch page is twitch.tv/DJ_Marmar. And for the playlist page, the archive of all of our previous shows and all of our future ones, you'll want to go to lagradio.kuci.org. All right, so without further ado, we're going to get back into that music. Thank you again so much for listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. This is Marmar the Midboss here with McKnowledge, and we are talking Doom.
Doom.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. You're listening to Lag Radio here at KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We are talking Doom 2016. We just got done listening to three songs by Mick Gordon. Flesh and Metal was the most recent one. Before that one was Hellwalker, and at the top of the set was At Doom's Gate. Of course, all of them off of the Doom 2016 soundtrack. Now, we're going to get into the story, and we're going to talk. Well, I mean, we're going to talk as much as we can about it because there's not a whole lot there intentionally. So let's try and talk about that. First off, you've got Samuel Hayden. Samuel Hayden is the chairman of the Union Aerospace Corporation, so the UAC. It's kind of the group that is in charge of the facility that you find yourself on Mars. And so Samuel Hayden is the one who awakens you, the Doom Slayer, the Doom Marine, the Doom Guy, from your sarcophagus so that you can rebel against the demonic horde. And that has taken over the UAC's Mars facilities. And on these facilities, they're harvesting an alternative energy source that they call Argent, which we later learn the way that they're actually extracting it is not from Mars, but from hell itself. Now, there is a UAC scientist named Olivia Pierce, And she is now, what do you recall of Olivia from your time playing it years ago?
I remember coming out of that sarcophagus and being like, why is Macklemore creeping on my nuts? That was the first thing I remember about her. But essentially, I kind of, they set it up where she's sitting there, she's brooding, she's staring at you, and she knows that, kind of what you're going to figure out by the end of the game, but they allude to very early on is, yeah, you're going to be the one that screws up the plan. You have the people bowing before your sarcophagus, which makes you originally kind of think like, oh, hey, they kind of acknowledge who I am in a good way, but then you kind of realize that they acknowledge you as the harbinger of doom.
Oh, nice. Very nicely done. Yeah, that's true. You definitely can tell right from the get-go that you are the one who's gonna lay havoc to their plans, to Olivia's plans. So you Olivia, she is a UAC scientist. She has gone absolutely batcrap insane with her obsession with hell. And she has done this such a way that she's made a pact with the demons and opens up a portal between the worlds. So hell in this is basically just an alternate dimension. It's the way it kind of plays out. There's portals that you can go through to hell, and yeah, it's like an alternate dimension. So it's up
Yeah,
to
they
you.
definitely bring out.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's like, yeah, they definitely bring out the kind of science aspect of it, because even though it has a deep root with all these kind of satanic imagery and stuff, like you said, it's actually much more of the science. It's like, why else would you be able to harness energy from hell rather than it just being this kind of pure occult force? And with some other games, you'll see the effects of hell as another dimension, but it's usually, changes in mentality, people going crazy, which there's a little bit of that going on, but they really do keep it down to earth. Like, we have this energy source, but we've found more about their lore, more about their history, and now we're investing ourselves in it as well, which is pretty cool once you start seeing how not just Olivia, but the workers there, how they kind of just accept, like, yeah, this is my new way of life. This is my meaning now.
For sure. Now, what did you think of Samuel Hayden? Because he's a character who, for those of you who haven't played the game, he is the person in charge of the UAC, but he's also like a robot.
Yeah, this is an exceptionally smart robot, which at first you're like, okay, he's a man, he's a robot. Why is he 7 feet tall and Olivia's only got this like little wimpy suit? Like, what happened there? Who got, ditched in that game? But then you realize that the suit is actually just a manifestation of his intellect, and that he's actually just a man, that you would expect at any higher level, kind of science job, intelligent like a rocket scientist, so maybe not like me or you. But, he had kind of created this second life for himself, and that's why you're seeing this robot and you're seeing this continuation of his work, which is why he's so invested in the Argent energy instead of, your introduction to him as being like, hey, everything's going awry, let's start figuring this out. He actually kind of is a little elusive. He's like, all right, I'll tell you what you need. He never says like, I'm going to tell you what you want to know, which is essentially the beginning of the game. He tells you, I'll let you know what you need. Even at this point, when everything's in utter chaos, surrounded by corpses, some of that empathy is clearly gone. I don't know how much of it was there to begin with, based kind of on the lore, but whatever was left is now gone as he tried to, just he's thinking of cleanup crew for his experiments rather than the real ramifications.
All right, so yeah, so we've got Samuel Hayden and his robot self. He pretty much gives you an earful when you destroy this tower that's been made to harvest the Argent from hell. So it becomes pretty clear that he's got some financial interest, of course. He's maybe a robot. He may not have a body anymore. He may have transported his mind into this robotic self, but he still wants his corporation to succeed. He still wants his legacy to be that. He is the one kind of in charge of everything. If it wasn't for him, then the Earth would just not be able to exist. And yeah, I forget it. I don't think you mentioned, but basically the reason why he's a robot is because he had developed stage 4 terminal brain cancer. But of course, if you are a brilliant genius and you're able to find a way to extract energy, alternative energy from hell, like you're probably going to be able to figure out a way to get around death. And so he does,
Yeah,
and that's
me
why.
too.
Yeah. exactly.
Dumb genius like us, and then we just die like normal people.
No, yeah, no, 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 of course not. No, he wouldn't be. He is more than a mere mortal. He is a genius. So he constructs a method to transfer his brain's data into the 3-meter-tall robot. It's huge. It's gigantic. Yeah, so you actually do meet him later in the game, and you do get to, I would say, meet him face-to-face, but kind of face-to-robot face.
Yeah, to sensor, face-to-sensor.
Yes, face-to-sensor. There it is. But really, all in all, the point is here, you wake in from the sarcophagus, you assess the damage to the facility, you find Olivia Pierce is trying to open this portal, another portal, to hell after you shut one down, and she just, like, you try and stop her, she sacrifices herself, she opens it, and you're just sucked right into hell, and this is your first experience. Now, what did you think of the, I think it's called the Cadinger or Cadinger Sanctum, the first time you find yourself in hell?
Oh, yeah, that was definitely excellent because, you know, the first part of the game, if you're playing, like I said, on a harder level, it takes you a little bit while to get into hell because just getting the groove of the game and getting weapons that can keep you alive long enough to get into hell is actually rather difficult. But yeah, when you walk in there, you know, it has more of actually that return to home feeling than you coming out of the sarcophagus. The sarcophagus actually felt kind of foreign and you felt trapped and you felt kind of stuck. But, you know, it's kind of a messed up homecoming that you feel when you walk in there. And the landscape is beautiful. The imagery when you look up, if you take the time to look up, you know, I definitely recommend it, especially if you have a 4K TV. Look up as much as you can once you get into hell because they have put some serious time into the art there, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it's funny to be talking about Doom as beautiful when there's all of these just atrocious, like, bodies strewn about, all this gore, all of this, like, just...
Yeah, I'm a little twisted. Sorry about that.
No, totally. I mean, I agree. It is beautiful in its own way. It's just funny to me. I would agree. It's interesting because when you awaken from the sarcophagus, you've got this metal facility. You know, there's all of these walls made of metal, ceilings made of metal, all these different technology objects and such. And it does feel foreign. It does feel weird. And then when you go to hell, there's rocks and there's crags and there's this red energy connecting these ruins that are just like falling apart. And that's the only thing holding them together. It's a very different feel. And I don't think it's the common interpretation necessarily of all of the hells. I mean, yeah, there's skulls everywhere. There's spikes everywhere. There's people being, well, I mean, everyone's dead, but they're all previously tortured in various ways. You can find that all about. But it's like a different, it's slightly different interpretation of hell, and I like it a lot. And so the story progresses where you have to shut down this second portal to hell via, I think you have to use, what is it? You use like the Vega computer system, and you have to shut it down because it's like this really hyper intense AI that's been developed for the UAC facility. And it even helps you, like, shut itself down. It's like, oh, yeah, you want to take down my cooling systems first and then go into my central core area and then make sure you disable the locks and this and that and the other. And somehow that sucks you when you, like, blow up the Vega system, the Vega computer system. It, like, sucks you back into hell. And then inside of hell, you have to grab something called the Crucible. Now, do you recall the Crucible?
Oh, yes, yes. It stands out definitely as far as, you know, when you're trying to figure out what's important in the game, who's important in the game, when you realize that this is something that Hayden now is valuing as much as he values all this other work that he's created, then you really see, like, oh, okay, this part of hell, even though it's small, you'll notice that it stands out from the rest of the Argent facility because everything with the Argent energy is big. It's very like a big piece of hell. It's a big piece of energy source. Whereas this is kind of equally powerful but more subtle. So, and then again, it's one of those design things where, you know, you just look at it and you're like, as twisted and dark as it is, it's like it kind of has this beauty to it. So it's the same as looking at a piece of like architecture.
Sure, yeah. The lead up into when you finally get the item as well, when you get the artifact that's kind of like a sword, kind of like a dagger, but it's just this twisted, evil-looking object inside of the circle, and you have to take down very difficult bosses. At least for me, I think they're called the, not Hell Knights. Maybe they were the Hell Knights. You fight one, and then you fight the other. With the green shield, or at least the first one has a shield.
Guardian guys. Those are awful. I hate those guys.
That was terrible. There are some difficulty spikes in this game, even playing on the normal mode, like, just, miserable trying to fight those things and trying to get the timing just right on the shields.
Yeah, those guys, though, I like the way they introduce them, though, as the just kind of, like, little wormy, scummy thing in hell, and then you kind of see it obtain, you know, kind of, not dissimilar to the way that Argent Energy is creating the enhancements to the Praetor suits. You see him crawl into this advanced armor for himself, and you kind of appreciate their use of their own like energy and technology at that point as well. But at like the basis of it, it's just another worm for you to squash, which I kind of like that little imagery that they put in there.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, when you go in, because with these boss fights, there's a few boss fights in the game. I think there's maybe three total. And with this particular one, you go in for what's called a glory kill. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the gameplay. But basically, you go in and you do a special kind of execution style thing. And with this one, you like punch through its chest, you reach in, you grab the worm thing, and I think you just like crush it in your hand or something, or you beat it against the armor or something. I forget exactly. But yeah, it's you take care of the worm inside and not just the exoskeleton, the armor on the outside.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed kind of how they played that into the story. Like you said, you know, they have that difficulty spike right before, and so it kind of gives you a hint that you're coming on to an important part of the plot. And I don't know if we touched upon this either. It's like, yeah, it's like part dagger. Later on, you kind of see it as a sword, but it's also a tool. Like, it's a very important tool as far as figuring out how, you know, you're going to progress through the story and just how... you know, we haven't touched on this part yet, but as Hell kind of had gone through its different escapades, it kind of accumulated things from other cultures and other dimensions, and you can see that evolve in addition to the evolution of the story behind the Crucible, which I thought was cool too.
Right, yeah, the final stage of the game takes place in I guess it's the next to final stage, possibly. I think it is the last stage. But you take it to an area that's called Argent Dunur, like it's D and then apostrophe N-U-R. And it's when you look through the lore, they start talking about how it was originally another dimension. This is another total world that Hell conquered and enslaved through like some battles and some betrayers on the one side. And yeah, it's interesting to see a different interpretation of Hell. It's not just this one singular plane, this one singular dimension, but it's something that can invade other areas and is trying to do so also with Mars during this game.
Yeah, so kind of like I said, stays with that more sci-fi mentality than kind of, I guess, would be more of a religion, cultish mentality, even though that part's definitely emphasized in the game. I like that they, you know, use it as like, you know, these are the artifacts. This is our history. This is something that we're all kind of proud of, despite the fact that we're all just evil demons causing all kinds of misery for everyone else. Like, we've developed our own culture and our own belief system around it. So, you know, going into that, even though, like you said, there's not a lot of story there, the quality of the story that is there is quite good.
Exactly. And so once you get the item, the sword, dagger, the crucible, it is that item, and you're able to use that to go to Argent Dunur, and you find these three wraiths. And these wraiths are, I guess, part of the previous race that inhabited that particular part of Hell, or that plane before it was part of Hell. And you have to free their souls using this dagger. Like, you stab it in the heart or something. It doesn't even seem like a humanoid figure or any sort of being. It's just like this massive kind of twist of, I don't know, sinew and muscle and just this weird forms that it creates. But you stab it and it releases the wraith. And so once you release the third wraith, then you are going to try and close the portal to Hell for good. And Olivia Pierce shows up. She's like, you know, I made this pact with the demons and I was promised this and that. And she just kind of topples over and sinks into the ground where there's this giant pentagram sort of symbol, and then rises up as this crazy spider metal fusion thing. It's gigantic. Do you recall this fight?
Oh, yeah, the big brain mastermind pain in my rear end. Yes, I remember it. I remember her quite well. She's, you know, definitely a different boss fight from some of the other ones, because the other one, again, is more emphasis on, like, the demon, the cyber demon, kind of this enhancements that you notice that are shared both with what Argent was able to do on Earth, as well as kind of how the demons use this to create their own, like, exoskeletons and kind of power their own super demons. This person was, again, kind of represents Olivia. It's like this mash of organic material and technology just got smushed together, kind of like I alluded to earlier. You know, why didn't she get a cool robot uniform? Well, because she didn't have brain cancer. She's got all this pain and enhancements from the exoskeleton, mm-hmm. but you know, it's not like she died and was resurrected. She just is essentially able to walk still. And I think part of the lore even alluded to, you know, she's in this like incredible amount of pain at all time, which is just twisting her psyche, but she refuses to have pain control because it, you know, clouds her ability to focus on her work, focus on the cult, and focus on the science all at the same time.
Great point. Yeah, it's the scoliosis that she had developed, if I recall correctly. And yeah, that's a great point and a good way to think about it. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about the cult aspect and how there is that in there. And I really like how they put forth the cult aspect in here, because there's the codex. This is really like your manual for a lot of the lore, like we mentioned, but it acts as a kind of a literal manual as well, because there are these entries in there about the facility and about some of the practices that go on there. And it's worded such that it's almost like an intro to the UAC for an inductee, like a recent inductee into the UAC. And it talks about, like, tier one inductees, you know, welcome to the organization. Here's what we do here. And it kind of doesn't reveal a whole lot of details. It almost feels like a Scientology sort of thing going on, where we're not going to give you a whole lot of info, but they mention, like, tier two or tier three that you can reach one day. Like, with dedication, you'll ascend to tier two. And then the moment that they start writing some of these entries for tier two, it's just like, hey, we're now taking volunteers for the Revenant program. Please join us as we transform you into a demon. But really, only the most dedicated followers should apply. Like, it's so straightforward. It's so deadpan and matter-of-fact in its delivery. It's so funny to me.
Yeah, because he does. That was a great way of pointing out, because the guy, when he makes these announcements, he literally will transition from 241 days since our last injury to, like you said, sacrifice yourself now for the Revenant program, but make sure that you're a believer. Otherwise, we're going to have to throw you to the wolves and you'll be on your own. And we don't want you corrupting the people around you. Have a great day.
Exactly. There was one particular entry I love so much. It stuck out to me for sure. It was the one where it says something like, in the event of demons being like set free for some reason, because they were not hostages, I guess, but they took demons from hell. It extracted them out of the dimension, and then they would run tests on them, right? They would like keep them in test tubes, which you see later on. There's these big old test tubes with the demons in them, either dead or alive, we don't know, but they're still just kind of like sitting there slumbering, I guess. And so they keep them in cages and something that can keep them contained. But they said, like, in the event that some sort of demon is released and you find yourself being chased, of course you're going to try and run away. But if, you know, you're not able to run away, then just make sure you try and settle down to your knees, let it happen, don't resist, so that way afterwards we can make the postmortem dissection more scientifically fruitful.
Yeah, don't damage our assets from your cowardice. Like, just keep your chin up, buddy.
Exactly. In death, you can still be useful to the corporation.
Yeah, especially with that one of the later announcements, like to the point where he just doesn't speak English anymore. He starts speaking in tongues at the end with the exact, like you said, same tone. 244 accident day free, sacrifice yourself for the cause, you know, some foreign language that was probably spoken in hell 300 years ago. The end.
I love it. All right, so that's going to just about cover it up for the game. Oh, well, I guess we should cover just the last little bit. So after you do finally beat the mastermind, the spider mastermind, Olivia Pierce hybrid fusion weirdo thing, you do find yourself back on Mars. The portal's closed. You're back on Mars. You're actually tethered to some sort of object. We don't know exactly what, you can't see, but there's the figure of Samuel Hayden, his 3-meter massive robot self in front of you, and he grabs the crucible, the sword dagger from you, and says something like, you know, you destroyed the Argent Tower, so I'm not able to use that anymore, but we still need the Argent as a resource for humanity to go on. So I'm going to, you know, put you away, and I'm going to develop a different way that we can still extract the Argent from hell without potentially having the demons run amok and take over the entire planet and also Earth. And then it just cuts to black.
Yeah, that was definitely one of those pure, I'm intelligent, but I am not going to learn from my mistakes.
Yeah.
I just refuse.
Oh, genius robots. All right, so that is the end of Doom. Do note, though, that there is a sequel that's been confirmed. So just a few months ago, they had the Bethesda E3 showcase, and they did show off that Doom Eternal, which will be the straight sequel to the Doom 2016 reboot of the series, will be coming out. It'll also have multiplayer. It'll also be from id Software, and they've got the same returning directors. They've got the same returning composer, Mick Gordon, and yeah, it's going to be a hell of a good time. Pun totally intended.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, it sounds like they're really going to, you know, like you said, at the end, they left it open. So now, I know they're going to call it a sequel, but it really does feel like they're going to now complete the story, which is what I think the difference between a good sequel and a bad sequel is, are you taking the old characters and creating a new story? Or are you completing the story that you started? And I hope that's their goal, and I hope that's what we see when that game comes out.
Oh, yes, definitely. All right, so we are going to take a break here. We're going to listen to some more music because, of course, we want to hear this sweet soundtrack. So let's listen to the soundtrack, and then let's discuss it afterwards. Next up, we're going to listen to Cyber Demon. After that one is going to be Damnation. And then, arguably, the best song on the entire soundtrack, if you ask me, BFG Division. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yes. So good. All right. So thank you for listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. This is Lag Radio here with Marmar the Midboss and McKnowledge, and we are discussing Doom.
Doom.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Lag Radio here at KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. My name is Marmar the Midboss. We're joined by McKnowledge, and we're talking about Doom 2016. Now, we have gone through the story. We've gone through the history and development of the game and id Software, how it kind of came to be with this remaster, reimagining, reboot of the Doom series. Let's talk about the soundtrack, because it is such a major component of the game. So we talked earlier about how the movement was definitely one of the biggest things about the Doom game that they wanted to make. They wanted it to be totally, not just an homage, but just really capture the essence that the Doom franchise is known for and is beloved for. So when it came to the soundtrack, that's like number two. That is like the number two thing on the list. And so they brought in a man named Mick Gordon. He's known for making a few other soundtracks he's worked with, amongst others, Destroy All Humans, which is a pretty fun game from like the PS2, I think, Xbox original era. And yeah, did you play that one?
No, that was one of those things where, you know, it ringed a bell in my mind, but I kind of wish I had time, in addition to getting destroyed on Nightmare Mode, been able to throw that into my repertoire before starting this.
Sure. I don't know if they ever did a remake for it. You might be able to find it on some sort of, like, PlayStation Network, Xbox Marketplace, perhaps, but I just recall it being kind of like a Grand Theft Auto-style game, but you played, like, this little alien dude, and yeah, you had to destroy humans. That's kind of the game. Silly.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a vendor from Futurama had developed a game. It's like, time to kill all humans. And then the little alien continues his little montage.
Yeah, dude. So the soundtrack was developed by Mick Gordon and some others, like Richard Devine, and drums done by Matt Halpern from the band Periphery. And one of the big things that Mick Gordon utilized in making this was, he said, all right, you've got these iconic themes from the original Doom, like E1M1 is just like the perfect theme for the Doom series. And so he said, we're going to take that theme, I'm going to just kind of reconfigure it, and I'm going to play it a lot lower and make it sound much more aggressive. So he brought about like seven, eight, and even nine string guitars to develop some of these really, really low, really rumbly sounds alongside those pounding heavy, heavy metal drums. And
I've seen his kind of commentary on it and like his thought process through, you know, bringing those guitars in. And when you see that nine string guitar, you're like, how much has to go through your mind to process, all right, this is where I'm starting. He's got this, like you said, the original Doom song, the iconic song. How is he going to create his own thing from it? And he just does an absolutely beautiful job making that aggressive and making it something where it catches your attention, just like level design right off the bat.
Yeah, it was brilliant. He was talking in some interviews about how when he was first given the game to kind of play through, because that's how he would compose, he would see some of the footage, and he wouldn't just watch the footage, but he would even grab one of his own personal controllers. He would put it in his hand, and even though it's not hooked up or anything, he would still just be in his place and think about like the music that would come to his mind if he was in playing the game and blasting through all these demons at such a crazy pace. So he wanted just this like horns up, heads down, let's slay some demons sort of feel, and it comes across perfectly. Now, one of the things about the soundtrack, too, is that it's not just constant heavy metal, as you probably can tell from what we've listened to this evening. There are some moodier, atmospheric parts. They have a lot of industrial sounds, a lot of grinding, sort of like metallic, hollow sounds going on that I think fit really well with the UAC facility on Mars and how it's, of course, a deserted, totally empty, besides demons, facility. And, you know, all the humans have been murdered or transformed into demons themselves. So it needs to be part of the soundtrack, but then it's also balanced with the driving, pulsing metal that there's no way that you can listen to the soundtrack and not just want to mosh your brains out to.
Yeah, it's like, how do you find a sound for 66,000 casualties? Wait, no, I got it, bro. And then he just goes from there.
Exactly. He mentioned about how he worked on this soundtrack really intensely. So last week we covered Stardew Valley. We talked about how Eric Baroni made the soundtrack to Stardew all by himself, even though he had really no necessarily songwriting skills besides being in some bands earlier on in his life. And he worked a lot on that game, the coding and everything as well. Same thing is true for Mick Gordon and just the soundtrack. He said he worked upwards of 18 hours a day for 18 months working under this outline that started like the top line of his outline was, does this song feel like Doom? And that's so comes across in a lot of the songs. I think it would fit perfectly in an old school Doom game if you brought it to the modern era.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that they now have to make as part of their project for the new Doom game is really just taking that new music and sticking it on some of the old levels and seeing what happens.
For sure. Some of the initially rejected tracks of the soundtrack, actually. So one of them we listened to begin with, the first one we listened to off of the set, which is Rip and Tear, turned out to be some of the favorites. So I like that. I like that message of, you know, you might be a very, very harsh critic of your art. You may be a very, very harsh critic of whatever it is you do. And when it comes down to it, though, sometimes it doesn't really matter what you think. It matters what the populace thinks. And they can really, really love what you produce, even if to you it's not the best, if it's not perfect or up to your standards.
Yeah, getting that kind of feedback is definitely crucial, especially if you're a perfectionist who likes to work 18 hours a week. I'm not a perfectionist, but I do at times work 18 hours a day, I should say, 18 hours a day. And I can tell you, I don't get better after several days of 18 hours. This guy gets better. And that's a big point of jealousy on my part. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people right now are just like, oh, what is this guy? He is as inhuman as some of this game is, I'm sure. Now, some of the ways that he developed the sounds in the game, I really, really liked. You should watch, there's a couple of YouTube videos. It's called Behind the Music, Doom. And it's from him, actually, his own personal YouTube. And it shows video of him manipulating the sounds through all these different analog instruments, all these different synthesizers. And he's taking music down, just sound, into its barest form. So we're not talking just note by note. We're talking sine waves. We're talking about actual physical noise that you can see in waveforms. And he would manipulate those sounds, broken down into the simplest parts, and then manipulate them by shoving them through all these different things in a way, taking these pure sounds of music and corrupting them. And I really, really like that mind frame in just taking things and corrupting it for a game, of course, like Doom.
Yeah, it's like he looked at Samuel Hayden and was like, I'm going to do what he did, but, you know, with the sound.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's so good. I definitely am going to come back to Doom in the future just in the sense of listening to that soundtrack and moshing in my car on the way to work. So, all right, so we're going to get back into some more music from the soundtrack. Next up, we're going to listen to some very different sounds, more of the Metallica sounding songs. We're going to listen to Olivia's Doom, the Chad Mossholder remix. We're going to listen to UAC Report File, and then it's got like a string of characters that's really weird. It's like SHTO36U3. I have no idea what it means, but we're going to listen to that one. And then we're going to listen to Vega Core, which is an 8-minute long, very like electronic metal sort of song. So hope you enjoy them. We're going to get back into the gameplay elements just a little bit, but make sure that you also find us on the web, facebook.com/laglife radio. You can see the giveaway ahead of time. So I've already posted on there, and this is actually how we're doing the giveaway this week as well. You just comment on the post that I made. It's got a picture of the Kako Demon pendant, and if you're one of the people on there who's commented, I'm going to select one randomly using a random number generator, and I will contact you on Facebook and get your address so I can ship it straight to your doorstep. So make sure you check that out. Also, our other various social media outlets, twitter.com/laglife radio, Instagram is @DJ_Marmar, and of course the archive is lagradio.kuci.org. All right, so without further ado, back into the music. Lag Radio, here with Marmar the Mid-Boss, McKnowledge, and we are talking Doom.
Doom.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Lag Radio here with KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, Marmar the Mid-Boss, and McKnowledge talking Doom 2016. We've gone through the history, we've gone through the story, we've discussed the soundtrack, the wonderful soundtrack by Mick Gordon. Now we have our final section, which is gameplay. So let's talk about the gameplay itself. First off, holy hell, what a fun game. Like, that's the first thought when I started playing this game. I was like, this is not Call of Duty. This is not Halo. This is not Battlefield. This is Doom. It is such a fun, fun game. What did you think? Your first thoughts?
It was literally, who got inside of my brain and pulled out a game for me for Christmas? That's how it felt. It felt like Christmas.
It felt like Christmas. A wonderfully bloody, dripping with viscera and sinew and all these things. Just wonderful. Happy, merry Christmas.
Art and Christmas. That's my feelings about these games right off the bat. Beautiful.
For sure. Now, one of the things that's important to point out that's different from this Doom from other games. So the thing is that they probably could have just taken the original Doom, made it look better, done this as a remastered sort of style, and not really added anything fresh to the series. But no, they wanted to make sure that this game has its own standalone concepts and ideas that were unique to the gameplay. And so one of the things is glory kills. Can you tell us about glory kills?
Oh, yeah. So right off the bat, they don't really do a lot of tutorials, but what they will give you a little hint about is you have these pinatas. They provide health and sometimes ammunition. If you would like to kill the pinata, please wait for it to glow blue and then orange as you shove your fist through its left ear.
Perfect. Yes, that's a perfect description. These pinatas, these gore pinatas, these are your enemies. So if you are shooting down your enemy enough times before they die, they could potentially flash blue and orange. And if you go up to it and you do a melee attack, you will not just melee it to death, you will do this execution that's just beautiful. And it becomes so addictive, not just because it's so cool looking, but because it's actually important to the gameplay. Like, if you are going through, you've got this giant arena with all these enemies shooting at you, and you're losing a bunch of health, you've lost all your armor, you go up to an enemy, you glory kill them, they will always drop a certain amount of health, and sometimes they will also drop ammo, and that keeps you fresh, keeps you going into it.
Yeah, I love that they added it as actually part of the strategy, because one aspect of it, you actually kind of speed up and, like, not teleport, but it kind of feels like a teleport because of how fast you're moving. So it gets you from one part of the map just slightly over in a very quick way when you're dodging all of these fireballs from the imps.
Yeah.
The second aspect of it, yeah, and another aspect of it is that, like you said, you get the health, you get the reward. But also, it's not like your traditional kind of cutscene in a game where you're sitting there mashing X over and over again to rip his head apart. You just do it. It's pre-cut. They know that if you're close to a wall, knee, head, wall, it's gone. It's obliterated. They know if you're down on the steps, you're going to rip their leg off and shove it down their throat. Like, that's all pre-programmed in there as part of your strategy, time management. And again, just even as simple as getting from one side of the map to the other quickly enough and doing so in a way where you actually start learning to not kill them. You actually want them to be a source of your power, a backup source of health. And, the fact that you're using that much strategy on something that's really just designed to be entertaining is great layering, great depth to gameplay.
Absolutely. Now, one of the important things to note there too is that our friend McKnowledge is not exaggerating. That is just how bloody and how in your face this aggression is. You are indeed pulling people's or demons' limbs off and just beating them with them or shoving them down their throat. That is a literal thing. And it's this violence is not out of shock value. I don't think it's looking to gross people out. It's really looking to just invoke that old feeling of like these comic books from the 80s and like the Iron Maiden album covers, like I mentioned earlier, to imbue this feel of cool. Like it just wants to be so stylish and so cool, and it doesn't come across as like it's trying too hard, like this is just violence for the sake of violence. It really does effectively give that sense.
Yeah, especially when they go through the process of telling you the lore, if you feel like looking into it, like you want your revenge at some point, and then you realize that's why they're committing some amount of time to the gores, because it's not just, like you said, shock factor. It's really communicating the mood of the game, which is just awesome.
Now, talking about the way that you communicate the mood of the game, what better way to do so than this outstanding array of weapons? Oh, the weapons of Doom. Oh, I love you so much. So the first weapon you get is the pistol, which has unlimited ammo, and it has an alternate fire where you hold the left trigger and you're able to aim down sights, and it produces this charge shot that you can fire, and it deals like a extra damage to a lot of enemies. And so that's a fine way to start it, but man, the rest of the weapons in the game, the shotgun, the super shotgun, the chainsaw, the plasma rifle, the heavy assault rifle, the rocket launcher, and of course, the iconic BFG, amongst other weapons, are just out of this world in how powerful they make you feel. Now, do you have some of the favorite weapons?
I think everyone just kind of goes right for the BFG because it's like the iconic gun of the game. But really, it's got to be the super shotgun. Like, it's just pure, it's what you look forward to. You look forward to loading that thing up and just taking its overpowered abilities, getting as close as humanly possible, and just destroying anything in your way. So, super shotgun all the way.
Definitely. I absolutely agree. There are moments where you're going to need to fire from things farther away, like I think that you mentioned earlier on in the program, some imps that are throwing fireballs at you, or maybe you're able to kind of snipe things out sometimes to make things a little bit easier on yourself. And so for that, you might want to use something like the heavy assault rifle that does have a zoom function. But a lot of the times, super shotgun. Do note though, the combat shotgun, the original shotgun, and the super shotgun, the way that they differ is that the super shotgun has a double barrel, and you do have to reload it after every shot. But it does so much more damage that it's just like there's this rhythm. It's just like boom, ch-ch, boom, ch-ch, boom, ch-ch, and you get into it. It's almost like a symphony in some ways of killing these demons in time with the shotgun being reloaded. That it's so beautiful.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I like about it too, is that you got to commit to it, because with a combat shotgun, you can clip the shoulder, cock it, and then, get your next shot in to finish them off. Your super shotgun, if you're going to commit to that, you got to hit them the first time, otherwise you're screwed.
Yes, yeah, and you need to be pretty damn close as well. Yeah, yes, you're up in their faces all the time, and I love it. At a certain point, and this is definitely part of the gameplay as well, you'll notice that you've taken out a bunch of the demons. There's still a few remaining, perhaps like the little stragglers or something, and they're not necessarily running towards you anymore. They're running away from you, and I love that feeling because it's just perfect to make you feel even more of this biblical force of nature that they can't stop. There's no way they're going to be able to stop.
Yeah, they all start off as brave soldiers with that deep voice commanding them to go at you, and then, the tail will go between their legs when they see it.
For sure. And one of the ways that we make these weapons so powerful, so intimidating against these demons, is that there is an upgrade system. So this is something that was not present, I believe, in the original Doom games. But there is an upgrade system where it can make your game even more unique, even more different every time you go through it by giving you this ability to test the waters, see what works best for you and for which fights. So, for example, you've got the shotgun, the combat shotgun. You've got the alternate fire capability after you unlock these extras through finding these field drones, kind of like one of those secrets that we talked about earlier in the game. Not exactly just collectibles, but things that actually influence gameplay too. So you unlock the ability to have an alternate fire, and one of them is you firing just these lobbing like explosive rounds, kind of like a grenade launcher. Or you could also unlock the other side, which is you're able to fire a 3-round burst of more controlled shots with your shotgun. And so, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, and I like how they use that as well to play into the strategy because, it seems like obvious, like, oh, I can turn my shotgun into a grenade launcher. Like, why would I not want to do that? And then you realize as it consumes all of your ammo before you're able to upgrade your ammo storage, you really got to, decide that you want that modification because otherwise you're going to go through your main weapons ammo very quickly early in the game. You have none of the other upgrades. This is the first one that you've gotten. So, you've got to decide that you want it and you've got to use it effectively, especially since, like you said, early on in the game, even if your favorite weapon's the super shotgun, at some point you're going to need to hit something at a distance, and this is your first opportunity to do so. So you really got to know what your goal is once you get into those, more challenging fights.
For sure. And they can also be further upgraded. So it's not just is it one mod, is it the other mod, but also once you pick a mod route or even unlock the second mod route, you can have them both unlocked and you can swap between them on the fly, which is a very, very cool, very fun thing to do. But what you do have the ability to do is upgrade your gun to reduce reload time. You can improve your rate of fire, other sorts of improvements. However, once you fully unlock using all of these different points that you collect through killing creatures, through finding secrets, through doing certain like little missions inside of the missions, so something like kill two demons with one shot of your Gauss cannon or something. So then you get this mastery challenge for your gun. It's not something you can unlock via just these weapon points. You actually have to do something. So, for example, one of them is for the super shotgun. You have to kill two or more enemies with a single shot of the super shotgun at least 10 times. And if you do, then you make the super shotgun even that much more powerful.
It's not F, it's when.
It is a win. It is definitely a win. Some of them are pretty difficult, though. I forget which ones it was that I wasn't able to fully upgrade, but there's a few that seemed pretty challenging to me.
Oh yeah, there's one where you have to. Actually, no, that one wasn't as bad because there's one where you have to use the rocket launcher's lock-on system a certain amount of times for it to upgrade. But that one I think was more reasonable compared to some of the other ones.
For sure.
So I'll actually take that back.
Now, upgrades don't just stop at the weapon mods, though. You also get the ability to find palm-sized containers of the Argent energy that the UAC is sucking out of hell. And when you crack these open, they give you an upgrade to either your health, your armor, or your ammunition cap. So you can choose which one every time you find one of these Argent energy containers.
Yeah, and it's very tempting when you're getting, fireballed, stomped, gooed, to just go straight for the health upgrades every time. But, once you realize that after the 14th demon that you're actually kind of running low on ammo, you realize, maybe at least one of those upgrades should have gone towards ammo, which is why, like you had mentioned, you got to go through this game at least twice, at the very least, so that way you can, experiment with your style, going with upgrading your ammo earlier on in the game rather than just going for health. When you decide to commit to the shotgun as a rocket, or not a rocket launcher, but a grenade launcher, committing those extra points to preventing the splash damage from those weapons, so that way you can still get up close and personal without, ruining 20 minutes worth of work.
For sure, definitely. I think the first thing that I did actually when I had the option of using the Argent Energy, I went with ammo first. Do you remember which one you went with first?
Yeah, you're smarter than I am. I went with health first.
No, I think health is totally reasonable. Armor you don't get enough, I think, in the beginning of the game, and it just didn't make as much of a sense to have a bunch of armor and not enough health. So I definitely would say health is equally as important as ammo in the beginning. But yeah, so these Argent containers, you don't just find them like they're not just given to you in the course of the game straight up if you're just like making a beeline for each objective. You do sometimes have to find them as a secret, hidden down an airway duct shaft and that sort of thing. So you could end the game not having all of the upgrades. Now, important to note about these upgrades though is that, and this is for you truly masochistic players out there, you're never forced to use these upgrades. So you collect them in the form of points. You're able to get points for your weapon mods. You're able to get points for your Praetor suit, which increase like your ability to find secrets, like your controller rumbles when you're nearby a secret. That's one of the area scanning routes. Or you can get one where it's easier for you to like jump in the air and control yourself. There's a couple other ones too. So you get them in the form of points. Same thing is true for the Argent containers. I don't think you're forced to use them when you crack it open. You can just let it kind of sit. Now, what that means is that some people, and I know I read some of this in some of the reviews, they found it too easy. They found the Doom game somehow too easy compared to the original games. And so, I think that there are a lot of ways in which you can make this game excruciatingly difficult, which leads me into the difficulties themselves. So the names of the difficulties, totally a throwback to the original Dooms. Your easy mode is not just called easy, it's called I'm Too Young to Die. Your normal mode, which is what I played on initially, is Hurt Me Plenty. And then the hard difficulty, the one that's the hardest at the time before you beat the game, is called Ultra Violence. Now, once you beat the game, you unlock Nightmare Mode, which is like the craziest thing because it's so difficult. Yeah, that's what you're playing on right now, right?
Yes, I am.
You are a braver man than I.
It's with great frustration, don't worry.
But there is an even more difficult mode than that, all right? For those of you who are truly like the most skillful of Doom players, you've been running circles around demons for days and weeks and years now. There is an ultra nightmare mode, and this gives you the added challenge of not just being in the nightmare difficulty, but also you have the constant threat, get this, hope you're sitting down, of permadeath. Okay? Yes, you die once, only once, and you are not just brought back to the last checkpoint. No, you are donezo. You are sent back to the freaking intro of the game. No chance of reversal. See you later. That's it. It's
Yeah,
just.
the fact that people really are that committed to the difficulty is, in its own way, admirable, but I don't have that. I definitely, the nice thing about this game is that they did do just enough modernization to make it relevant. Like you had said, there's an upgrade system which wasn't there before, and you can use that. Like, that's the only reason I'm not, I didn't stop on the first level of Nightmare Mode is because I was able to get that shotgun upgrade and get like a just a tiny bit further. But if I hadn't done that, then I would have just been sitting in the same, getting destroyed by the same imp over and over again during the very first battle.
For sure. Now, speaking of the imps, though, of course we have to talk about the enemies themselves. The enemies, punishing. So sweet. Their designs, everything, even down to the end game. I love that specifically the imp was like my top priority in murderizing because it's just they're so annoying. Their fireballs are so annoying. Oh, it's terrible. What did you think of like the imps going into the end of the game? Am I just a bad player or are they annoying for you too?
Oh, no. Yeah, it's definitely because, especially as you kind of progress, they'll take up half of your, health bar with one hit. And essentially, once they get up on the walls, they're essentially untouchable, and you have to wait for them to come down. Because anytime you clip them with anything that's a short-range weapon, even a super shotgun, they just kind of laugh at you, brush off their name, keep going.
And these are just like the basic enemies, basically. I mean, there are technically lower below them in Demons. There's like the possessed, I think, and there's the un something or other, like the
Unwilling.
unwilling or something. And then there's also the skulls that the flaming skulls. I forget what they're called.
I hate those things.
Yeah, those things are technically easier. So, but imps are like the basic. They're like the elites from Halo, I guess, of the game. Well, maybe even just like the grunts, in some ways too. I don't know.
Well, and you can't underplay how difficult they are because, like you said, there's a lower level that's just these like floating skulls that run themselves into in this little kamikaze mode. But they are literally the reason why I will never go beyond Nightmare on a difficulty level because, one, I suck at platforming. So they knocked me off of a platform multiple times. Just for that one reason, I will never try like permadeath on this game.
Yeah, good call. Good call. You'd be crying, I'm sure, as much as I would. Now, they did bring back a lot of the fan favorites from the original series, so that's something that they definitely wanted to pay respects to as well. So you've got your Kako demons, you've got your cyber demons, you've got revenants, which are just hilariously metal looking, like their skull faces and their rocket launchers on their shoulders, and they're super tall, and yeah, they're just so sweet and metal. And then there's good old Pinky, which is even what they're called in lore. Like in actual Codex, it refers to them as Pinky, which is just this pink, like I don't know, like a stunted growth Barney looking thing. It's got like a tail, it's got just this ugly mug, and it just like charges at you, and it's nonstop, just stomping around. But it's short, so it's kind of cute.
It is kind of cute, but if you've ever had nightmares about tooth decay, that would be the other way I'd describe it. Really, just with its little, gougy thing that it comes at you with. It's like, all right, so I've gotten a couple cockademons, in other words, ghost of pimples past, and then we've moved on to Pinky, which is my nightmares about tooth decay, my dentist murdering me. So let me move on and see if there's anything else behind door number 3.
Beautiful. Yes, worded very well. So there are, of course, also new demons and new enemies that we mentioned, like the Spider Mastermind, which is the final boss, and the Hell Knights, I don't think were in the original Doom, or at least not in the same way that they are in this one. But do note, I don't want to talk too much about the sequel, but they have announced with Doom Eternal that there will be twice the amount of demons coming to you soon. Just so exciting to me. Oh, so many cool demons coming, I'm sure.
Yeah, because they worked really hard. You can tell Samuel Hayden's a little bit on the dark side even compared to me because they pretty much put a rocket launcher in every orifice that they can find, which means they are now going to make orifices and then shove a rocket launcher in it.
Exactly. That's the next step. It's the next level. Now, of course, it's not just enough
Burn.
to. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just said it burns.
It burns. Yeah, really, really burns. It's not just enough, though, to see these orifices shooting out rockets from rocket launchers, but seeing them in the visually stunning manner that it is, it almost, I don't know what it is. It's just kind of, I don't want to say shot in that way because it's not a movie, but it makes it look almost like a movie or like a demo in that it's just so fluid, it's so unreal, which again, no pun intended, because that's also an id Software game, but it's
I'm
unreal that it's got
quaking
this look.
due to the puns. I said I'm quaking due to the puns.
Oh, nicely done, thank you, sir. It's just so hyper smooth, it's so fluid, and it brings a hell to you that's it's just the most appealing hell that I've ever seen, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't gotten a soundboard or a 4K TV, now would be the time to get it. Honestly, like, you use that to smooth out your gameplay. You see every nook and cranny because those hitboxes, like they're not drawn out for you, but once you get a good TV, you start mentally picturing them, after the nightmares resolve, of course. And the sound bar to help you keep track of those demons really is like, I'm not a rich person, but I have never felt like I've wasted a dollar playing this game on a 4K TV with a sound bar. It's just awesome.
For sure. Would recommend highly in getting a good setup to enjoy Doom in the highest quality you can. Now, I do want to point out some of the critiques. So we talked a little bit about the multiplayer, and another critique that I found, and I think I might agree with, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. How repetitive the game is. What did you think?
It's repetitive if you consider that you take the same basic game elements and those are repeated. I will agree with that, but do you feel like every battle is the same? Hell no. just from corner to corner of the room, you will never be able to reproduce the same amount of anxiety and the same amount of strategy. Like I said before, even just with the glory kills, if you were to take the demons and just shuffle them around a little bit, even in the same arena, you would have to time out your glory kills differently. You'd have to select out different weapons. So, I mean, if you feel that it's repetitive, you know, jack up the difficulty level, my friend, because then you'll see that there's a little bit different in each battle.
Sure. I think that some of the critiques were talking about how there were, it's kind of like you've got this section of the game where it's kind of slow, kind of there's nothing to see besides just like all of these really graphically detailed representations of hell or just all these people's bodies strewn about in the UAC facility, and then you find this open area, it closes it off behind you, and then you've got an arena battle, and you beat them all, and you go to the next section that's kind of just a carbon copy of that. So I don't know if I would agree with that, though, because there are plenty of moments where you've got the open map, you can kind of go wherever you want, you're not locked into it, you can fire from things from farther away, it's not just like they suddenly spawn in front of you all the time. Sometimes they exist before you even get to them. And yeah, I think another part of that repetition, though, is how you're playing the game. Because if you're playing it for, like, hours and hours on end at once, no breaks, then yeah, but that's also going to be true for any game. Like, you're going to get repetition from basically any game if you're playing it, you know, without nonstop for hours and hours. And I think that this game is very, very good when you play it in these bite-sized chunks, like playing one mission, two missions in a row, and then just, like, really savoring that. Savor the doom.
Yeah, exactly. And again, you know, you really do have to find which games fit you, because one of the very first things I think that flew out of my mouth when talking about this game, because like I just couldn't hold it in, it's like, you got to play it more than once, you got to play it more than once, because that's exactly how I feel about this game. So inherently, even if I didn't want to break down and micromanage each criticism that I have of the game, like I would still have that inherent feeling like I'm already thinking about playing it again. So deep down in the subconscious, it's not getting bored. It doesn't feel the repetition. And, you know, I can intellectualize it all I want. But, you know, when you sit down and play it, you'll know how you feel about it pretty early on. So I understand the criticism, but again, like, I don't feel it.
Definitely. Yeah, totally agreed. I think that this is a return to form for the Doom franchise, especially after Doom 3's survival horror sort of jaunt instead. And this is the modern audience's Doom. I think that it's something that they made sure that it did respect the original and that they improved on it in ways that makes sense for the current first-person shooter audience. So that's my take on Doom. I think that it's a solid game. I would highly recommend it to anyone who likes first-person shooters, very, very fast-paced first-person shooters, and for anyone who is okay with some more mature themes in their games.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a few times where, you know, in the horror genre, you'll just be surrounded with, like, gory kind of things that make your stomach turn. This is more kind of exaggerated, colorful gore, and very intermittently along the lines usually of the occult practices, you'll see something kind of hidden in the corner in the art that makes you a little uneasy, and I think it's just the right amount. Like,
yeah,
they just make it, you know, a little bit more fun for those who, like me, kind of a little twisted. And the only opportunities that I think they miss is, like you said, we're not spoiling anything because it's equivocal to book club, but there is a point where you take the severed arm. It's not even pre-severed. You got to do it your damn self because, you know, make me work, right? So I take the sunroom off of this guy so that way I can use his hand to get through a door. And a missed opportunity was like, why wasn't this level named Armed and Dangerous? Like, come on.
Oh, why aren't you working for id? Come on now.
Hey, if they'd hired me, I'd be there in a second.
For sure. All right, so that's going to wrap up this week's episode of Lag Radio. We're, of course, going to be still on the air next week with our final show for the quarter. So we're going to be closing out the summer with a very, very different game. So we went from Stardew Valley, right? Very, very relaxed farming simulator, kind of just take it easy, pluck some carrots out of the ground. We went to the heavy metal hell that is Doom 2016. And now we're going to kind of flip it right back to more of the funny, sillier side of gaming. We're going to talk about recently released game called Overcooked 2. It's made for party games primarily. You can definitely play it by yourself if you wanted to, but it's not going to be nearly as entertaining as when you are managing food that people are ordering alongside a couple of your friends. So we're going to talk about Overcooked 2. We're going to play the soundtrack for you, if I can find it, I guess. I think it might still be available online, possibly. And we're going to talk about the development team, how they made the game. We're going to be talking about the, well, there's no story, pretty much, I can tell you that. But we will talk about the gameplay and what makes it so fun, what makes a party game so entertaining. So we're going to be talking about that next week. Don't forget, though, online as well, facebook.com/laglife radio, we do have our giveaway for the Kako Demon Pendant for this week. So visit the website if you want to win it. All you got to do is just comment on the post that's on there, and you are in. So check it out there. Don't forget, our Twitter page is laglife radio. Instagram is DJ_MarMar. I will be streaming on Twitch next week throughout Sunday, Monday, and Thursday for some magic. So join me there for some silly janky decks at twitch.tv/DJ_MarMar. And then if you've missed any of the shows previous to this one, check out lagradio.kuci.org for all of our episodes, playlists, and podcasts. So with that, we're going to close it up for the evening. Thank you so much, McKnowledge, for joining us and giving us your McKnowledge as well.
Oh, it was my pleasure, friend. Always.
Thank you. All right, we will catch you next week. Don't forget, Lag Radio, 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday nights here at KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. See you next time.
Bye.